This is the eHealth Radio Network, your source for health advice on demand. And now your host, Eric Michaels.
This is Eric Michaels, and once again, you have tuned into the eHealth Radio Network and the Stress Management and Technology channels. Make sure you connect with us on Facebook to receive the latest programming for your convenience simply at eHealth Radio. Today, we have Dr. Andrew Chatte, co-author of The Resilience Factor, founder and president of Phoenix Life Academy, research professor at the Medical School of the University of Arizona, and co-creator of MeQuilibrium, an interactive, clinically proven digital coaching system that helps users dial down stress for improved outlook and resilience. Dr. Chatte, welcome to eHealth Radio.
Thank you, Eric. It's a pleasure to be here.
And the pleasure is certainly ours as well. Thanks for taking out a moment to be with us. So, Dr. Chatte, in addition to co-founding MeQuilibrium, you are the founder and president of Phoenix Life Academy, a company that specializes in measuring and training in resilience. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to find such a niche specialty in resilience training.
Absolutely. I'm a PhD in psychology. I got my PhD at the University of Pennsylvania back in the 90s when we were doing an enormous amount of work in the area of positive psychology. And one of the areas that we were particularly interested in was resilience. We got interested in that because we had come to the realization that we were facing as a nation an epidemic of depression and that it was hitting younger and younger children. And we thought that the answer was resilience. Turns out it was. We were able to halve the rate of depression in kids at risk and keep that off for 2 years. So we got into the depression prevention area, but then realized that resilience is such a foundational skill set that it has applications in other areas as well, including helping college freshmen in their transition to that life, was successful with that, and in the corporate space, helping people with productivity and performance and engagement. And beginning in 2009, really took these essential concepts of resilience and began to apply them to stress. Because, Eric, as it turns out, resilience is the natural antidote to stress, and stress is the new epidemic.
Certainly good to talk about this further. Now, a big buzzword going around right now in the workplace is the term burnout. A recent Staples Advantage study says over 50% of American workers experience burnout. It's something we all want to avoid, of course, yet it seems that the way we work, we're all heading for it, and that's no doubt about that. The American Institute of Stress goes so far to define burnout as a disabling reaction to stress on the job. Can you share with us the warning signs you're at risk for or already in a burnout and your three best strategies for taking care of yourself when you're burning down?
I absolutely can, and I agree completely with how that term burnout is being conceptualized in that study. The reality is that we all experience stress. And one thing I want to say to your listeners, Eric, is that stress is not the boogeyman. This is not a bad thing. Stress is designed to get us completely ready to deal with the kinds of adversities that we need to face. It gets our bodies ready. It gets our minds ready. It's actually a good thing. The problem comes when we are in the midst of too much stress, and then we are in overwhelm, and then we get into burnout. And when you think about it, this kind of makes sense. If you think about our stress system, it's designed to get us ready to deal with a threat. And the kinds of threats that we used to face a long, long, long time ago may have been a lion jumping out of the savanna grass. And our bodies would sense that threat, inject adrenaline through the bloodstream, our heart would pump, our pupils will dilate to get more information about the world, our muscles are tensing to get us ready to either fight or flee. Now, the thing there is our body gets activated acutely and instantly, and within a second or two or a minute at most, that adversity is gone. One way or another, the lion attack gets resolved. Our bodies go back, if we happen to escape, our bodies go back to a resting level, we recuperate, and then maybe a week or 2 weeks later, another lion. The problem is that we don't face lions anymore, and the nature of our adversities are not acute, they're chronic. So now what we're experiencing is work-life imbalance, having to do more with less, aging and ailing parents, referring our kids from one place to another, worried whether we have enough money for retirement, worried whether we'll keep our jobs. So we're facing chronic stresses, and that is getting our stress system revved up chronically. As my colleague Adam Perlman, who's head of Duke's Integrative Health, says, this is like pushing the gas pedal to the floor and keeping it there. Eventually, the machine is going to break down. So burnout for me is when we've had that gas pedal pushed to the floor, dealing with all of these chronic things in our lives and our stress response responding until the machine breaks down.
Great breakdown on that. Now, getting back to resilience, which has been defined as the ability to deal with adversity, be it small daily stressors or traumatic events, why does it seem like there are those people who seem to deal with resilience better than others? And according to the scientists, we have the capacity to build resilience. Now, what are three suggestions that you would have and that you could share with our listeners when it comes to rediscovering their resilience when they're tapped out?
Absolutely. And this gets back to the second part of your question, which was really about, you know, what are three techniques we can do to head off burnout or help us when we're in it? And, you know, one of the things we know is that stress impacts all parts of our lives, and it has causes from all parts of our lives, whether that be what we're thinking, what we're feeling, what we're going through in the world, or even what we're doing physically. Now, I would say that one of the very first things, and our research bears this out, one of the most important things for people to do to get out of burnout or to prevent it is to get sleep. Now, that may sound easy, but it is key. It's almost impossible for any of the other facets of resilience to kick in if you're chronically underslept. And what we find is that a lot of people, everyone knows that you should get sleep, but not a lot of people are doing it. And I think that gets at the kind of ways they think about the world. And I'll use myself as an example. I have two young children, and so what I think is, hey, I've got this work-life balance thing beaten. If only I get less sleep, I'm going to be able to spend more time with my kids. Or I can be at work, you know, 12 hours, 10 to 12 hours. I can get home, be with my kids, get less sleep, do more work, and I'll still be able to balance it all. But you know what? We get caught out. It leads to burnout. My daughter, 9 years of age, complained to me that I was grumpy. And I asked her to rate my grumpiness. Being a psychologist, we do this kind of thing with our kids. I asked her to every day rate my grumpiness on a 3-point scale. 0, not grumpy at all. 1, a little bit, 2, a lot. And what I found was that on the nights that I didn't sleep that much in order to spend more time with her, she rated me the next day at my grumpiest. So I wasn't really achieving my goal by cutting back on sleep. So we have to abandon lack of sleep as a badge of honor or as a means of getting more time with our kids or easing work-life conflict. And we have to make sure we're getting what our body needs. That's number one. Number two, we need to be aware of the fact that a lot of stress is emotion-based. It might be frustration, might be anger, might be sadness, guilt, shame, a lot of anxiety we see, obviously, with stress. And what we need to know is that often the emotions we feel when we're under stress are not accurate. They're not based on accurate thinking. Often our thinking goes off track, and we think we have fewer resources than we really do, so we get frustrated. We perceive more violations of our rights than are really happening, and we get angry. And we see things as being worse than they really are, so we get sad and anxious. So understanding that how we think has a profound influence on how we feel, and that in conditions of stress, our thinking goes wrong, that's the second greatest key to being able to prevent burnout. And then there are so many others. One of the things that I would say to your listeners, Eric, is even though it may seem that you don't have enough time to do this, reach out to somebody else. Spend 5 minutes on the phone with someone that you like. Go and do a chore for a neighbor. Volunteer for 30 minutes on a Saturday with some organization that's doing good things in your community. We've come to the realization with our research that one of the biggest compatriots of stress is that sense of feeling blah, meaningless, missionless, and purpose-free. So one of the things we want to do is to get re-engaged in our lives, do something meaningful that has mission and purpose. There are so many other things that I could suggest, but they're three of the big ones.
Super insight today. We are with Dr. Andrew Chatte, co-creator of Mequilibrium, an app that digitally coaches users to help dial down stress levels so that they can focus on things they love to do. Here on eHealth Radio's Stress Management and Technology Channels, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. Dr. Chatte, let's talk about how stress affects us at different times of the year. Obviously, the holiday season is probably one of the most stressful periods of the year, but during summer months, most of us try to take a break and go on vacation. Only over a recent Glassdoor study shows an outstanding 61% of U.S. workers admit to working while on vacation. What are some of your suggestions for listeners who have a hard time disconnecting from their job while traveling when they really should be making the most of their vacation time?
That's a very good question, Eric, and a very good point. And this study is really quite alarming, isn't it? You know, if I think back to my father's day, when he had vacation and we all piled into the car and went on our summer vacation, there was no way the office had to contact him. They didn't know where he was. There was no such thing as a mobile phone. There was no email. And so for those 1-2 weeks, however long he took, he was absolutely free. And we just don't have that anymore. You know, we are constantly contactable, constantly reachable. And now we feel like we should be, even when we're on vacation. So the one thing that I would suggest to your listeners is this. Why is it that you feel the need to be constantly connected to your job when you're on vacation, reading those emails and answering them, doing 2 hours of work in the morning before you go to Disneyland with your kids? Is it fear-based? Are you worried about losing your job? Do you think that you have to do this to be able to keep it? Are you afraid of the kind of work that you're going to come back to and feel like chipping away at it a little bit at a time is going to help? Get out the reasons why you feel you need to do it. Is this a corporate culture? Is everybody doing it? And if the answer is yes, is that a healthy corporate culture? And what can you do to protect yourself against it? This really, I think, gets at the concept of mindfulness. As smart as we are, we have difficulty shutting off and compartmentalizing. And so often, even when it's not vacation time, Eric, when we're back home, and we should be spending time on our relationships with significant others, friends, family, and children, we're sitting here thinking about work. And then we get to work, and we're thinking about how we should have spent more time with the kids, and why did I yell at my son this morning as he was getting ready for school? So that capacity to be present in any given situation and really funnel your energies towards that situation while you're there, that really gets at the capacity of mindfulness. And that ability to be mindful and present is something that can be taught and learned and improved upon daily.
Now let's get to the new book. The book is called Mequilibrium, 14 Days to Cooler, Calmer, Happier, and it was written collectively with your colleagues at Mequilibrium. Malika Chopra, daughter of Deepak Chopra, calls the book a wonderful guide to creating and maintaining balance and joy in your life. Tell us about how you came to design this 14-day plan and why our listeners should purchase it.
Well, absolutely. You know, the reality is you're not going to transform your life in 14 days, but what you can do is create a foundation that will be life transforming. And at Mequilibrium, we've really done a lot of research on what is stress, what is balance, what's the difference between the two, what is resilience, and how can we help people get there. And we understand that there are 24 factors that make up stress, and we've learned a lot about how to impact those and in what order and sequence to impact them to get the maximal impact for someone who's using our skill set or a reader. And we chose really the 14 key pieces of this model, and we set them out in the most logical order to get the biggest bang for the buck. And we really begin with getting a handle on your emotions and bringing those down. And then the second place is sleep. And we look at a number of aspects around physical health, diet, nutrition, and exercise. We all know what we should be eating, and we all know what we should be doing at the gym. Only about a third of us come even close to what we should be doing. And there's big belief systems and thinking traps that are getting in the way there. So we tackle all of those. And we believe that within these 14 days, if people follow the program of just a few minutes each day, it will set the foundation that will give them a life trajectory that will lead to greatly improved balance, greater resilience, and definitely lowered stress. And the number of studies that we've run around this program indicate that really reinforce that idea that this is going to work. It's a good read, I think, and we've brought in some great people. I represent the psychology side with resilience. Adam Pohlman is the director of Duke's Integrative Health and represents more of that physical side. And then we have the president of Equilibrium, Jan Bruce, who spent years in publishing in healthy lifestyles. So between the three of us, we feel like we have something unique to say. The readers will be the judge, but the program is proven. And I think you'll find that it actually is fun.
Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to be with us here today, Dr. Chaté, and for all the helpful and insightful information. Where can our listeners find you online and to get more information accordingly?
Absolutely. Thank you, Eric. It's been a pleasure to be here. www.mequilibrium.com. That's equilibrium with an M at the front, mequilibrium.com. You can find everything there is to know about us, more than you probably wanted to know. References to our books and also to our program. A lot of information about the effectiveness of the program and ways that you can get involved. And a lot of health tips and nutrition tips, wellness tips, resilience tips. A lot of information there, free for anyone who wants to click on.
Certainly a valuable resource. Dr. Chaté, thanks for being with us here today on eHealth Radio.
A pleasure, Eric. Thank you so much.
And you're more than welcome. We've been speaking with Dr. Andrew Chaté, co-author of The Resilience Factor, founder and president of Phoenix Life Academy, research professor at the Medical School of the University of Arizona. And once again, the website of reference is mequilibrium.com. And this has been Eric Michaels, and you've been listening to eHealth Radio and the Stress Management and Technology Channels, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. And we do thank you for listening. And until next time, enjoy.
Thanks for tuning in to the eHealth Radio Network. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit eHealthRadioNetwork.com.